Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone! Hit well. Deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is the official Covering the Corner podcast, episode 189. I am your host, Matt Lyons. In this week's episode, we'll, of course, have some meatballs, talk about what happened in this week in Cleveland baseball. And this week, we're going to have a mailbag episode, answer some questions that people had about the Cleveland Guardians. Got a bunch on Twitter. Got a lot of good ones. We'll talk about those. Maybe talk about Austin Hedges getting some hits. Andrés Giménez, suddenly the best player in all of baseball. Who knew? Joining me for a little bit more, another Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I don't think I ever said that he was the best player in all of
baseball. Oh, I'm saying that right now.
Oh, all right. Well, in that case.
Are you not saying he is, Merritt? Are you saying you hate Andrés Giménez?
Here's the thing.
Did I just hear Merritt Rolfing hates Andrés Giménez?
Here's the thing. I have a tab open right here. It's labeled a certain player named Mike Trout. He's also very good. And I think him, all I'm saying is him and Giménez and perhaps one other player also in Cleveland are neck and neck and neck. And it's only because of playing time, really, that we're not getting enough Giménez love going over here. Yeah. Plus, center field's a bullshit position. Mike Trout, you're trash. And shortstop, a not bullshit position. Because, you know, it's hard playing center field.
Center field. I can play center field. It's so easy. Listen, Mike Trout. Listen, come on, man. Be a shortstop.
All this is catching balls player. In the air. Like, exactly. That's the easiest thing. It's trash.
They're so high in the air. How could you not see them? Just walk up to them and catch them.
Three easiest positions. Center fielder, one. Pitcher, two. Because you have to throw the ball. Three, catcher. Because all you have to do is catch the ball.
It's right in the name. Position. Simple stuff.
Yeah, it's literally, there you go. There's a reason why the catchers wear, their gear is known as the tools of ignorance. So there you go.
So, Matt, the important thing is, how excited are you to watch some 9 p.m. games, 10 p.m. games for the first time this year? After all those weird mid-afternoon games on the West Coast now, it's going to be just a bunch of garbage start times in a row. They got the Angels before games will open for three. They fly home and play San Diego, thankfully. But it's going to be a rough week for anybody on the East Coast who enjoys a reasonable sleep schedule, but also watching baseball live.
Well, here's why I don't care, because I have most of the next week off, so I can just watch as much baseball as I want. So it's pretty easy for me, personally.
Going to be up at 2 in the morning, sleeping till 2 in the afternoon. That's living the life right there.
Exactly. Listen, I'm trying to live the life I want to live. You know, I think the key to it all is, you know, exactly. You stay up till 3, sleep till 11, vibing. You're feeling great. That is the ultimate. I honestly think that is the ultimate kind of schedule to keep. Go to sleep at 3 a.m., wake up at 11 a.m.
Oh, yeah. That's the dream.
That's perfect. You get to experience all the cool shit, and you can just kind of hang out in the late night when no one's bothering you, and then you get to wake up after all the garbage of early morning.
And nobody wants to be awake between 7 and 10. Forget that.
No. It's all about 11. I can't think of a single fun thing I've done outside of watch a Formula One race between 7 and 10 in the morning. Like, that's it. Like, if not for Formula One, I'd be in bed until 11 on weekends. Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what else happens between 7 and 1 on the weekends?
Damn, that's a pretty rough transition.
Meatballs, Merritt. They happen, of course. Meatballs are serving up tidbits of baseball, what the Cleveland Guardians did over the last week. This one's another special, exclusive Merritt meatball, because I don't have one. But what's your meatball for this week,
the Merritt? Worst co-host in history. So actually, I was, as we all know, Aaron Civale is not having a start. Thank you.
You could call it not wonderful. That's a way to put it.
You could call it trash. Big trash. At 9:50, you know, you don't want an ERA that's higher than the number of innings you could possibly pitch in a complete game. And that's what he's doing. I think he's also elevated his career ERA to basically 4 in the last 3 starts. Yeah, he's been getting hammered. And so I was curious as to, you know, I mean, one of the fun things about baseball stats is there's a billion of them, and we can dig into and find things like, you know, actually, just because X or Y is happening, things, the process is there. It's just, you know, the result is not what we want. So I did a little digging into a very specific pitch for Aaron Savali, his cutter, which was, even last year, one of not just his best pitch, but one of the best pitches individually in all of baseball. It had a run value of negative 14 runs in 477 total appearances. I don't know what word to use there. But I saw a couple of very surprising things. So I'm just going to focus on vertical movement for the moment. In 2019, his cutter had 27.7 inches of drop, which was 0.9 inches better than average. The next year, so for those who don't like numbers, this is going to be a really boring section. But the next year, he had 26.6 inches drop, actually less, more than an inch less, which is 1.5 better than average. The next year, he had 29 inches of drop, which was 1.3 inches worse than average. And this year, he has 33 inches of drop, 0.6 inches of drop, which is the best he's ever had, and also 3.2 inches worse than average. Now, let's focus on what's important. That's right. Horizontal movement with a cutter. 5.5 in 2019, 3.4 better than average. 5.1 in 2020, 2.2 better than average. Last year, 5.5, again, 2.9 better than average. And this year, 7.4, 3.6 better than average. So what I'm saying is, he's held relatively firm in what he does as far as total movement. 7.4, I think sample size is making that a little bigger than it is. But it really, honestly, Matt, if you look across all of his pitches, Aaron Savali is roughly the same pitcher he was in 2019. And he is worse for it because everyone else has gotten better. Everyone else, like the average pitch across baseball, and this is even looking at taking into account things. Maybe it's not taking into account. Maybe it's just even looking at things like if we're looking better and worse than average. Like everyone equally experienced the lack of spider tack last year, or whatever sticky substances you're using. And generally, Aaron Savali is worse off for it. Now his slider is much dirtier than average. I guess that's a positive, but he's not throwing it very much, which sucks. But I'm very troubled by this because he also throws the ball very not hard. And so
I think you kind of nailed it. Like the rest of he looked like a very good pitcher in 2019. He would probably still look like a good pitcher in 2019, but like the rest of the league has gotten so much better over the last 3 years. And despite all the tinkering and stuff he did, he added that changeup last year. Like none of it has just worked to get him over the hump at all. It's not good. It reminds me a lot of like Trevor Bauer when he was like, you could see the underlying things that he was going to be good at pitching. Early on with Cleveland, and then like eventually this sort of started to pan out, but like it's just not panning out with Aaron Savali. Despite all the, he's doing all the right things he needs to do, he's making changes, he's his walk rate's terrible this year, but he usually doesn't walk a ton, but I don't know, it's just the guy's not figuring it out. I do like the fact that his drops haven't increased as much as the league does. I don't know what he's doing or not doing that that's not helping him out there, but something clearly is he's not cut up to the rest of the league. I think there's going to be a point that we have a question later on about the rotation, and I think it's going to end up being Aaron Savali's the first one out, which is not what I expected coming into the season.
That's fair. I agreed. I think we were both excited about seeing him make, I don't know. I mean, and you know, nothing, I know we discussed this several times, like nothing is linear in baseball. Like jumps, the word jump is used for that express reason, right? It's all of a sudden the guy becomes much better. And you could point to a million examples of this. But like Savali's throwing the ball less hard. I mean, this happens with every pitcher, obviously. Velocity is, it peaks early and drops off slowly. And he was always kind of on the razor's edge with velocity. He's like, I was just even looking at this now. Like last year, his average, you know, fastball velocity was 92. It's down to 90 now. And again, the sample size is much smaller. He's only thrown it, you know, a few times, but which is not to say he is washed as a pitcher. He's just washed as not washed. He's just maybe not the number two, number three, like
Yeah, it's more like a Josh Tomlin down the road, which is
probably not the worst exactly. thing. Exactly. I think Josh Tomlin is his floor, and Kyle Hendricks, I guess, could be his ceiling theoretically. I think, and that's a dream, and which is, you know, I mean, it's there's a lot of difference between those two, and like the fact that he's throwing nothing more than 32% of the time, his fastball is his most used pitch, is forcing him at 32%, his cutter at 30, like his cutter's getting mashed too. Like last year, it was good and useful and helpful, and you know, it is one of his worst pitches this year. So that combined with the fact that his, I mean, I talked about this year. He still gets a ton of spin, which helps, but like it creates that kind of perceived, in a sense, velocity because the ball, you know, like if it was with fastballs, it drops less than you think it would. But I don't know. It's, baseball hitters are so good. You hit a point where it's just, I don't care how much the ball is moving. If it's moving, if it's still a fastball and it's moving an extra inch or whatever it is,
like they'll still find it eventually. Yeah,
they're gonna beat the piss out of it. Exactly. Yeah. So
and the weird thing is, like, it almost even doesn't matter in this rotation because everyone else has been so good. Like Cal Quantrill isn't striking out a ton, but he's getting his outs. But
what is with him, by the way? Like, I know we get it more
amazing.
Yeah, I think even I got in hate. What's his name? Eli Morgan's start the other day. I feel like he kind of got caught, tossed into the fire. It wasn't pretty. We had a few, I thought he had a few good moments. You know, there,
good job in a start. I thought for what it was, like that was another. I don't know why I was going back to Josh Tomlin for like everything, but that was another Josh Tomlin-esque start for Eli Morgan. Is this like
because we were trapped in this hellscape of having to watch a man who throws the ball 92 miles an hour at his very hardest, just grind his way through these, you know, 80-90 kind of guy.
Which for Morgan is up. I don't for everybody else their velocity's down. But I feel like is his up a little bit compared to last year, or close at least when
that's
he's
a
in
great
the bullpen.
Question. We could find out by using the internet.
If only there's a way to find out. I don't think information exists.
They phase it out. They pretty much phase out the internet in general. but yeah, exactly. Like it's just it's one of those things where it's just like you look at Savali and like you want him to be better. Obviously, we want him to be better. But like I guess I thought that he was the kind of guy who was going to make some kind of, I don't want to say leap again. And maybe again, it's only three starts. Literally, it's 10.
He could turn around easily, but. But
without a doubt,
they still happened.
Three bad starts. The thing is, I think I'm pretty sure this is the case. And like, I've read, if you think about this, like when it comes to pitching numbers, like sample sizes are much smaller than you think they're going to be, as far as like seeing total spin rates and movement and stuff like that. Because like, how much variation you're really going to get at in 10 innings? He's still throwing, you know, 300 pitches or whatever the heck he's throwing, 200 pitches or something like that. So, he's getting strikeouts. It's just he's walking a ton of people. I think that's the real scary part, because he's a man who has to live on the margins, just because of what his total repertoire is, and you worry, I suppose, about what will that look like. And after them wearing a sweep over the weekend, ugh, it stinks that when they lose, it's a sweep.
Yeah, right.
Or when they win, it's a sweep, and you're like,
it's been the whole season. They either win by scoring a ton of runs, or they get blown out. Or
man, what if it's been the whole way? What if this entire year they're just like, oh, we got swept. Oh, we got a sweep. Oh, we got swept.
Oh, we got a sweep. Yeah,
I might have a heart attack.
it's gonna be a weird one, and with the whole AL Central is gonna be extremely weird this season, I think, because
the
White Sox
are the Twins are in first right now.
The Twins, whatever the hell they're doing. I don't know why everybody just assumed the Twins would be bad, because. You know, they changed a ton last year. I think it was a ton of bad luck to be the worst team in the division. And they got Carlos Correa.
I think they were discounting some of those young bats too, because there was a lot of talk about how good the young guys are going to be eventually. And
they still could stink too. I mean, again, it's only so many games, but also it seems like everybody always sticks out in the AL Central, which didn't happen this year. Like the Tigers and Royals did not jump out to like a huge lead and then fall off. They would have by now. Maybe it'll be the Twins who do it, and then they fall off. But I guess it's a little more normal this year in the AL Central than I thought. But I guess we'll find
just
out.
It's just a battle of mediocrity. Somebody can win this division with 85 wins. And will we feel good about it? No, we won't feel good about it. Anyone. No one. It's going to be 85, 84, 83, 82, and 60.
And one of them will still get in the playoffs, like an 81-win team, because you got to just cram them all in there. That makes the playoffs more exciting to have more teams, obviously. But yeah, this week for the bulk of this episode, I thought we'd ask, because we don't do them every episode anymore, just to get a bunch of questions for people, because we would get good ones and like to answer them once in a while. So kind of going off the what we were just talking about, at Colin Jones asked, basically extremely reliable two-week sample size currently available to us. Do you think this is going to be one of those years where an 80-something win team could take the AL Central? Absolutely. It's going to be – it's not going to be any amazing team in this division, I don't think. It's going to be like an 85, 86 win team who wins.
What's wild about this too, and I'm sorry to interrupt you if you had a second point to make there, but like – again, we're talking about 15 games. Hey, but also you can say, oh, but it's 10% of the season. The only team I feel that has the most, like, I guess, like, complete roster is, of all teams, the Cleveland Guardians.
Right? After all this, that's kind of what it's looking like.
Because, like, Minnesota's pitching, I was just looking at it, and, like, I don't know who any of these people are. I don't know who Bailey Ober or Joe Ross. These are fake human beings. Bailey Ober and Joe Ryan are characters Joe Ryan specifically is a character in a Tom Clancy novel. Bailey Ober, I don't even know what he does. Chris Archer is, he might be good, but he's also a recovery project. Chris Paddock, I don't know who that is. Sonny Gray's already on the DL, and their bullpen is fine. And then you flip the script over there to the White Sox, and their rotation is bad. Honestly, there are two teams who have a decent offense and no pitching.
It's only bad to certified Lucas Giolito hater Merritt Rolfing.
Again, he's all right.
Apparently, Dallas Keuchel
outside of him, like I don't know, man. Keuchel stinks. Vin Velasquez is again a reclamation
Dylan
project.
Dylan Cease, he's been good.
Dylan Cease has been fine, but like I don't know. Like I don't think he's been. He hasn't been like electric or shut down. He's been third best pitcher in a rotation style, which I think is what they're hoping for. Kopech, I mean, his numbers are dope, but there's a. I feel like even if you have an ERA of 0.64 and you have a fielding independent pitching of 2.23, that's troubling to me. He hasn't given a home run up yet, but he walks a ton of people and he doesn't give up any hits. I just feel like he's a guy who's been very lucky. And if I click on his link, I could tell you that his batting average on balls in play is.
Take a shot and guess low on that one.
Let's find out what it is, actually. Now I'm curious because I was just goofing around. And now I can't find it because I forgot how to use Baseball Reference. 200. So, yeah, exactly. So his batting average on balls in play is, 100 points lower than both himself and also MLB averages. That will swing back. Not to say he'll be bad, but, like, their pitching has not been great. Lucas Giolito already hit he already got shelled for injury worries briefly, which is troubling. And then on top of that, Eloy Jimenez is dead again, which is troubling.
I forgot about that. What did he do? Like he just like injured his shoulder and they basically the funeral
I don't
for
know.
Him
it,
the day after.
I think it was a hamster. I don't know what it is, but he's hurt again. I don't mean to make jokes, but it's just
wasn't a joke about the injury. It's a joke about the White Sox's Twitter response to the injury. But
I hope I hope he comes back and is fine. But like,
yeah. But they're inconsistent on offense at best. Like even on defense, Tim Anderson has been a train wreck at shortstop. So they're not a full defensive team and. Luis Robert's going to get going, I'm sure, but again, he'll dip for a while just like he did last year. Andrew Vaughn's really young. He'll do it again, too. Like, they're going to be a team that goes up and down, too. Probably for a lot longer streaks than Cleveland will.
Their manager somehow keeps on starting Leury García and putting him third in the batting order.
I saw so I follow a
couple times.
A White Sox Twitter. I follow a lot of White Sox people, and there's a conspiracy going around. I don't know how much of it is a joke, but because they all sort of realize that Leury García is not good. He's basically their Michael Martinez, and he's been around forever.
Visibly not good.
So there is like a prevailing thought that someone, either Tony La Russa or their ownership, likes him and is demanding he's in the lineup. So he's putting him at second to make a point. To like, look how bad he is. I'm going to keep rolling him out here because you want him out here kind of thing. I think if that's the case, that is hilarious and awesome. But
it's levels of psychosis that I cannot even wrap my head around. But even beyond that,
what is the other explanation, Merritt, for putting a negative 25 WRC plus guy out there every day batting second? Because it's funny looking at their lineup, you see like normal batting average, and then it's like 0.69 for Leury García, who's batting
second. You know what? A batting lineup of Anderson and then, I don't know, Luis Robert, and then
yeah, they have the players for a good like 1-6.
You know what? Make a good lineup. Honestly, if I saw Garcia batting eighth, I'd be like, that makes sense. He's batting
third all the time. He's batting second consistently.
Like yeah, it's ridiculous. So like they're being hamstrung by their own, you know, ineptitude essentially.
Yeah.
Tigers still aren't good. Royals still aren't good. It's not like Cleveland's great, but like
yeah. And we have to remember too that Cleveland, they have a recent track record of at the deadline. If they need something, they'll probably go out and get it if they're close to competing. We've seen them do that a bunch of times. That's why I've never been super worried about not trading before the season, because if they're going to make a trade, they're going to get somebody at the deadline, which I think is like either they're going to trade a pitcher who they know is going to explode. At this point, I just have to trust if they trade away a pitcher, they know that arm is about to be shredded. Either that or going to get somebody like a Josh Donaldson and try that and grab him at the deadline. But they've been really good about that when they're competing, when they're competitive. So if they're like at the top of the division at the deadline, I would imagine we're going to see somebody coming over to help out.
And they, I don't know, and like their bullpen is much better than I thought it was going to be. I mean, obviously, yeah, I don't know, Class A,
Stefan. Class A's been bad, but I don't think anybody else. But I think like, he's going to get better than he has been.
Right. But I'm not going to say, he's bad. Stefan's good. But Sam Henches, I mean, maybe he figures something out this year. Who knows? I don't know. I'm still riding it, baby. We were there.
But do you think Trevor Stefan's legit? I think Brian Shaw's going to be old again. Nick Salen's going to be good. Logan Allen, I don't know why he exists still. I think there's like 3 or 4 potentially good relievers, which maybe that's enough to be a good bullpen. Anthony Gomes,
I don't think that's good. I think he's been decent. Listen, even if he's a loogie, like, I don't care, man. You have 100 mile an hour, the slider loogie guy. Yeah, let's do that. Let's keep on doing that. Like,
he's got those Austin Hedges eyes, too, like the crazy, always super intense. When they like flash between him and Hedges, it's just like sets off your.
Like a doll's prey eyes. Or, yeah.
What is that? Prey drive? Like when you look at a lion and you just want to run, that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Well, I think they have a good top four. I think they have a good like 4 or 5 guys there. And I mean, they keep on rolling up Brian Shaw. My father-in-law was in town. And then we went to the game on Saturday, I think, where I was grilling out. And I put in they put in Brian Shaw in like the 7th. I went, no, he's so bad and crappy. Damn.
I thought you were going to say you like quietly pushed more on the burger on the grill. You were just quietly squishing it. All the juices were coming out in anger. Brian Shaw.
I hate that guy. He's so old.
I don't know.
But yeah, again, I think they have a bullpen there. Obviously, I think the rotation needs some time.
Yeah,
Zach Plesac is worse than he is. Shane Bieber is who he is at this point. I think I'll accept it.
Yeah, I think that definitely. To get back to the question, I think there's going to be an 80-win team, and it could very easily be the Guardians.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I think that's what it is. Yeah, I think an 87 win team could win this division because they're just going to beat up on each other and not beat anybody else. is a part of it too. Like everyone's going to take a trip to New York and get swept or win one, and then they're going to go, well, that was tough. Let's go down to Tampa. Oh, no. And they're going to go to Toronto and go, oh, this is even worse. Oh, no. So they'll head out west and just wear, who knows? I don't know. The Mariners are a fake team that doesn't actually exist, so who cares? But, yeah. 85. I think 85 could win this division as much as I think 95 could right now. It's a bizarre time, and I don't know who it could be.
Sort of on the rotation at Shurstonator 455. He asked, what is your prediction for the rotation by the end of May?
What is that mean?
Based on the meatball? Kind of Aaron Civale out. The rest, other four, I don't see going anywhere.
I don't know. I mean, I can't say out.
Well, yeah, out. But I think it's the closest. I don't think it's a guarantee. I think the end of May is even soon to presume any kind of change. Like, I'm pretty sure it's going to be these five. As long as nobody's injured, I don't know why they'd swap out. I mean, who else do you have ready to go? So like there's a weird gap.
Right, therein lies the issue. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if Connor Pillman's in the bullpen. Bullpen, I don't know if he's gonna be one. There's a scary gap now in pitchers. Now that like Eli Morgan, Logan Allen, Sam Henches, all these guys clearly aren't full time starters. There's a small gap forming, which is kind of getting concerning. But obviously until Daniel Espino, which probably is not until the end of the year, or even next year, but not the end of May. I'd imagine the next pitcher that comes up and establishes a spot at some point is going to be Espino. There's going to be like spot starts, obviously, like Eli Morgan again. Kirk McCarty will get more. I'm sure even like there's going to be bullpen games. But I think end of May, it'll still be the same. Bieber, McKenzie, Plesac, Quantrill, Civale. later on in the season, it'd be really cool to see Daniel Espino come up. But I think by the end of May, we won't see many changes to this rotation.
I was just looking into it because I was wondering, like, just who was that Savali specifically pitched against. And, like, you know what? If I were looking at that, him getting pounded by the Giants and also the Yankees in back-to-back starts, that's fair. Those are two teams who just crush. Like, they're just good hitting teams. But he also got hammered by the Royals in his first start.
Another good hitting team, right. As they say.
Like, his longest start is four innings. He's gone three and a third against the Royals and three against the Yankees and four against the Giants, both teams. Yeah. So, like, I don't know. I think the idea of him being finished is a highly, it's a poor statement to make, but like.
He's just the closest to being on the edge, I think, of anybody else.
I guess, I think that's what it is. I mean, he's just finding his way to then at the same time, he's someone like McKenzie, who, like, I don't know if it's just the team wants to kind of baby him along this way. I think Quantrill to a lesser extent, but like McKenzie, like, he's just not getting starts, I guess. Like, we're seeing him pitch a lot. He's just not going deep, I suppose. And
yeah,
I don't know what that means. I don't know what that is.
I mean, nobody's going super deep. I just imagine with him because he's. I don't know how long we can use the skinny thing as a reason for anything they do with him, but if they're worried about the ramping up for him more than other pitchers like Bieber, who's obviously built out more than Tristan McKenzie, like maybe they're just pulling him along a little slower than everybody because everybody's a little bit slower right now. I don't think anybody's all the way at this point, even like going as deep as they possibly could.
Right,
like Bieber hasn't been forced to go probably like over what he's extremely comfortable with. So I'm sure he's going to come along eventually, but.
Because we're still dealing with the short. It's still a weird time, thing anyway. Yeah, they're still kind of working up because of the short, spring training.
Yeah.
But I mean, of players, you know, to kind of tangentially answer the question too, of pitchers I actually like truly trust, I guess obviously I think it's Bieber in order. I would say Bieber, Quantrill, McKenzie, Plesac, Savali. I can't remember who it was in the Slack, but they mentioned, they referred to what Plesac is doing, these smoke and mirrors and like 153. Excuse me, 1.33 ERA, 3.76 fielding independent pitching. He's not getting any strikeouts. I mean,
yeah, I think that was me that said that. If we can find anybody to look through the smoke and mirrors to trade for him, like it is, like call the Padres.
Yeah, exactly.
Padres they'll see that ERA, like, yeah, he's obviously good. Let's get him.
Hey, Padres, you want this? Just give us four future Keystone players. That's all we need. Yeah.
I mean, you just got to call the Padres first on everything. They're almost saying Jose. Could you imagine what they would have traded for Jose Ramirez? I'm glad it didn't happen, obviously, but again, I can't imagine how much stuff was in that trade.
Not the kind of trade you could even make because you have to give them someone who's like a fringe.
That's true. Yeah.
If he were actually perfect, he might be a fringe Cy Young or MVP player. But like, you can't have someone who's just like he should have an MVP kind of thing. Yeah, because who they traded? You know, it's like Mike Clevenger, who if he's perfect, could sneak into a Cy Young, but
yeah,
and they ended up with. Literally two current rotation or two current batting lineup like mainstays at this point,
and a good rotation member in Cal Quantrill. That was
probably that's true, and then probably the best of the four of them in areas too, who already got his first hit the past weekend, which is fun. Yeah. Applause to him.
The next one, very important question. At Pale Dragon Seabus, he asked, would you rather fight a mile sized straw duck or 100 duck sized Miles Straws? Would you fight Miles Straw, Merritt? I don't think I'd fight Miles Straw. He's scary. He jumped up on that fence defending Stephen Kwan. Not even
duck size. Yeah, I could kick the shit out of him. Are you kidding me? But I'm sorry, but 100.
Wait, no, a Miles Straw. No, you got it backwards. It's either one giant duck that's the size of Miles Straw,
or 100 tiny Miles Straws. Miles Straws.
They would climb you in an instant.
Well, in that case, I would beat up that. I'd fight that duck. I would fight that deck 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Go out for the legs. You know, you're good to go. But you hop on his back and give it a good choke. Obviously, listen, I'm not coming out of this without shedding some blood due to various pecs. And
you got to do what you got to do, though. If you got to fight a duck, you got to fight a duck.
I'm going to get beaked, but I'm not going to face up. I mean, listen, he was 100 of them. Exactly. He's scrappy. He's going to climb me. I mean, I'll be fighting one off. Another one's jumping on my back and hitting me with a little bat or something like that. One of those bat day bats. It's
not a scene of trying to fight. I still had one of those for a long time.
Exactly.
Pirates one, yeah.
Yeah, maybe he'll take off his helmet. Will be one of those little helmets you get full of ice cream. He'll be hitting me with that. That hurts.
Yeah, that moment in Yankee Stadium was not awesome for the game of baseball or Yankees fans, but awesome for a Guardians building moment. Like I jokingly said on Twitter, the World Series DVD is going to start with that scene and like a fade to black, and then some radio announcer talking about how young and experienced the team is. Like, if they go on to do anything this season, even if it's not true, like that's going to look as the look at like the moment of that everybody came together and all that. Because I don't know if you saw the video today, but when he jumped up on the fence to yell at the Yankee fan, he was saying like "fucking hit me," which is the most badass thing I've ever seen.
What a badass!
He's cool. I know, right? It's awesome. If he was doing that for no reason or just somebody being annoying, it'd be another thing. But the guy was mocking Stephen Kwan for being injured, and they were yelling at Oscar Mercado all game. But like, could you imagine? Just you think this baseball player is just so far away in that big green outfield. You got this big wall in front of you, and he just leaps up Spider-Man style and is in your face. And
I'm going to beat your ass in. Oh, no. I hate this.
I guarantee that guy's not going to be yelling at any more fans. I still think that – I think I said this in the podcast before. I went to an April game in, like, 2012 when Cleveland was playing the Angels, and somebody yelled one thing at Mike Trout, and then he turned around and looked at him and then looked back. And he's been MVP player ever since. I don't know for sure that Mike Trout took that one guy's mean comments.
Hey, I think the guy just literally said, "Trout, you suck." No.
And then Trout like turned around and looked and then just looked back. But I mean, before that, he was like an 89 WRC player in his rookie season. After that, I'm just saying, he's an MVP. So maybe this is where Miles Straw and Oscar Mercado becomes Mike Trout.
I'll show you, guy in Cleveland, I don't suck.
I'm sure it's going to be his Hall of Fame speech. Listen to that fucker on the right field bleachers.
I just want to say, I heard from my rookie year, I heard from a guy in Cleveland, he said I sucked. Well, guess what, asshole?
I took that personally.
Let me let some things out for you. Three MVPs. We probably have two more by then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he has four already. I know, he's three. Okay. Yeah. Five MVPs, etc.
So the next one, go with. So this one I liked a lot, just to think about. At Catman 54321, he asks, is it fair to categorize the stockpiling of shortstops both through the draft and through trades a failure? This approach has not given the Guardians an elite shortstop, nor has it given us a trade for a credible MLB corner infielder, first baseman, or catcher. I don't know. I don't think we're at the point where this strategy. I think a lot of teams do this too. It's not like just the Guardians, but I think it is. It's just what you do. You draft everybody who starts as a shortstop. You probably just don't realize the guys who come up and are like star second basemen or even like catchers or outfielders who started as shortstops. It's just kind of been made more in recent years that people are paying attention to lower minors, that you draft all these shortstops. So I think the ones that people have started to pay attention to, it's only been like the last 3 or 4 years when people have really started to have access to like great coverage of, I guess, all around baseball, the farm systems, but especially Cleveland's. Yeah. Where people are seeing all these shortstops come up and they don't always pan out. It just doesn't always work. And for the Guardians, like the ones they have with the big name ones, they're just now getting here. Like Tyler Freeman is the one we followed forever. I mean, obviously somebody named Francisco Lindor worked out as a shortstop. I think Jose Ramirez was a shortstop first. So we just don't see that they always start as a shortstop, but you just don't realize that when they're up. But I think as we start seeing, as people are following the farm systems and these guys come up and get traded or they get, they stick around. It is kind of weird that so many now are in AAA and also still shortstops, like Gabriel Arias.
Yeah.
These guys are getting high in the system and still just sticking a shortstop, like Arias, Tyler Freeman, Brian Rocchio, who's the one I think is going to be the one that eventually sticks a shortstop. But all these guys are, Andrés Giménez is obviously in the majors now, but he's another one. So they're stockpiling shortstops. I think they're maybe sticking in the middle infield longer than they have in the past. But I think in general, it's definitely not a failure. I just think you haven't noticed in the past that these guys have always started shortstops, because when you're like in high school or whatever, if you're just a kid who can do whatever, they just throw you at shortstop. If you're athletic and you can hit, that's just where you go, because that's where the ball goes. So I don't think it's a failure yet, but
I have two thoughts about this. First of all, I mean, I'm just thinking back from my own personal, like, I remember when I was in college, it was a D3 school, so it's not like it was like super studs or anything.
Are we back in Merritt's playing days?
I was not playing. I was just watching. But the best player in the conference, he played for St. Norbert College, I think. They're up in – anyway. But he played two positions, and he hit like 450 that year or something. You know, I mean, it's college ball. But he played shortstop, and then he was also their closer, because he could throw like 95 miles an hour. So I think, to your point, that's part of it. It's just like the best players always play one of three positions. catcher, shortstop, or center fielder. I mean, center fielder is much less than the other two. Think about someone like Bryce Harper. He came up as a catcher, for instance, you know? Like, these are just the positions where you put the best possible players because they have the biggest impact overall on the game. So them drafting shortstops is not a big thing. And then the second thing is, too, it's like, you could say it's a quote-unquote failure, but, like, how many minor leaguers and prospects actually make it is the thing. Yeah. You know, the burnout rate on literally anything after literally first overall picks is insane. Second overall picks make major leagues half as much as first overall picks. And it's the same kind of like, is it parabolic? That's not the word I'm looking for. But it's the same kind of curve, whereas like third overall picks make it half as much on average as second overall picks. And when was the last time? I can't remember the word I'm looking for. Parabolic is a total like down and up, but fuck, this is gonna bug the hell out of me. I'm gonna remember it in like 3 hours. I'm gonna sit up from bed and go, oh, that's right. But like, when was the last time Cleveland picked even in the top five? You know, they just haven't done that. I think honestly, since the 90s, maybe I could be wrong offhand, but like, there's never Lindor been that
top.
No, he was picked 12th. 14, yeah. He's a 12th overall. Like, that's stuck in my brain. He was picked 12th overall.
Is that why he's number 12?
Yeah. So, like, that's the thing. Like, they don't pick that high. So, just starting off, we already are running into a law of averages that is against us of finding good players. And then, obviously, the trades and things like that, too, finding good players. I understand the approach they do, which is finding generally athletic guys that they think they can mold into something or who can find a way to impact the game in a way beyond just at the plate. Like, that's the thing. I go to someone like Jimenez. He's, again, 23 years old. To say that his whole thing is a wash is ridiculous. And that being said, obviously, you've got other guys like, you know, I don't know, just Chang, I guess. Yu Chang. I don't think his, you know, whatever. But they also did not have a lot of space for shortstops from about 2015 till a year or so ago. Because of, you know, as you mentioned, Lindor, they also turned another one of them into what may end up being one of the best players in all of Cleveland baseball history. So,
yeah,
I understand where the question asker is coming from because we hear so much about these middle infielders. The majority, generally speaking, a player is not going to work out. I think that's just the way it is. I think that Major League Baseball in general has done a good job of hyping, I guess, young players more because they deserve it. But like, even to say something like Adley Rutschman in the Orioles system is going to be a star is ridiculous because he's in literally the same system that produced Matt Wieters, who was also a number one overall prospect, number one overall pick. Joe Mauer with power. Again, a fine catcher. You know, it's like, I hate to cross sports like this, but like, Marcus Camby, I think, is a perfect example of a player who was a very high, I think he was a number one overall pick, who had a tremendous career in the NBA, but was never someone you'd look to as say, that guy is a certified number one pick. It doesn't work that way. And like, you can hope all you want for like player development, all this stuff, but like some guys just can't click. And then it takes some time too. Like, I don't know if Owen Miller's for real now. I mean, I assume he's not going to hit 484 for the rest of the year. I'd love it, but like, he looks like he's figured some things out. And I think the fact that, you know, we've discussed this several times, that log jam of mediocrity they seem to face in so many positions has restricted them from seeing what they have. And I think combating that is the lack of a willingness to lose a shitload, for lack of a better term.
And I think it is also fair just to say in general that they've not been great at drafting and developing any position players.
I think that's fair too. Yeah.
It's not the strategy of stockpiling shortstops. It's just kind of a byproduct of they've even admitted it. They've had trouble, maybe not trouble, but they don't have position players as locked down as they do seemingly pitchers. So it's not specifically that strategy. It's just kind of a mix of what you said, that their positions just haven't been. It's just kind of the side effect of not tanking. Like you said, they get these middle of the road picks. So they're not getting these guys who are clearly going to be pretty good in the majors. I think, like, it's average out to not be as good.
Honestly, like, I would say, if just looking at the lineup right now, I would say the three best overall players in the lineup right now are obviously Jose Ramirez, who they drafted and developed, Fermil Reyes, who they traded for, and honestly, I think Miles Straw might be number three, not because of the bat, but his overall impact defensively, yeah, too. Yeah. Again, someone they traded for. And then after that, you're looking at someone like, I guess, Rosario, maybe you could say him too. Again, someone they traded for. I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out, like just because there's so many moving parts right now, you know what I mean? Like, I guess Naylor, yeah. But again, someone they traded for, like,
yeah,
fit more in the developmental path, but
I think they've realized too, like, they can just trade for these guys who already developed. Like, the yeah. Miles Straw trade is a peak example of that, is how good of a trade they are. As much as I love Phil Maton, he's gone now for Miles Straw. They got their starting center fielder for a reliever. They just got an already developed player in his prime for a reliever. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So at the end of the day, like, I think a lot of you can pump all the energy you want into player development, and like even the Dodgers do that. But I think we're fooling ourselves if we think that they don't have massive numbers of guys they're pulling from to find the Gavin Luxes of the world. You know what I mean? Like, they're obviously probably, you know, better at developing players overall, but like they're also the ones who are spending a lot of money. So filling the holes of the money they spend with a Gavin Lux or a whoever the hell, you know, like, even look at someone like Cody Bellinger. He won an MVP and now he's bad. So I don't know. It's baseball. Baseball is stupid. It's a stupid sport that doesn't make any sense, and I've never figured it out. And if anyone who says, like, I've figured it out, they're lying to you. So
yeah,
everything's moving all the time. I mean, I agree with them. It sucks that they keep on pumping in these middle infielders, but like, there's a reason why first basemen don't go first overall in the draft very much.
Yeah.
Because you're immediately pigeonholing yourself into something. You always draft someone at the very worst as a third baseman, because at some level of athleticism, then they eventually end up at first base. Miguel Cabrera, perfect example. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I think we'll finish with this one. This is basically just another reason for me to say Brian Reynolds. But at XC Warrior 1, he asked, what is a viable outfield option to bolster the offense? Brian Reynolds. I don't know if you ever heard of this guy, Merritt? Have I ever mentioned him in the podcast before?
I mean, I
would outfielder for the Pirates, with, Brian Reynolds.
Why would they need an outfield option?
That is true. They're stacked in the outfield now, Merritt.
They got Quan Straw, Mercado. I mean, worst case scenario, even Miller out there. I mean, who, Naylor, he's there too.
Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, joking aside, like, it's going to be hard to see. Like, you've got to make sure at the deadline, if Mercado is still hitting like this, I think he's been bad, actually. But
he's actually not hitting like anything. He's hitting 196 with no walks.
But I mean, if there's three guys hitting well, other than obviously Miles Straw, like, you've got to know that Stephen Kwan, if you're not going to trade for somebody, you better believe that he's going to stick like that, because it's going to be like borderline franchise altering if you buy into the wrong outfielders and you pass on guys you could trade for. So I think we're still going to have a gap out there eventually. I think Miles Straw, we believe in. I think Stephen Kwan, I'm pretty close to being all in on Stephen Kwan at this point. Like, he had a couple bad games, came back, had some really good games when he comes back from the injury. Let's see how he does without seeing a baseball for a few days. But yeah, I think Brian Reynolds is still out there.
Yeah, I have 1,000 questions on Stephen Kwan. Yeah, I watched him and I'm just like, he's good, but is he good?
I mean, that leg, like I think I said before, the first one we talked about, I'm like, you're gonna know when he's off, because that leg kick is so wild. Like,
yeah,
you'll just be able to see that it's not timed right.
The thing about Mercado too, as you mentioned, he's not hitting well, but like,
he's real bad.
I really like his approach. I don't know, man.
I mean, he seemed like a great guy. Remember, he was shit talking Skip Bayless. We're talking bad about Cleveland.
You have to hear it. But also, he's mashing the ball. Like, he doesn't walk. He swings and swings and swings. I mentioned
he's an Twitter, expert bad pitch hitter. I feel like that's his peak. Like, he'll crush shitty pitches, but he just gets caught up in everything.
Like, he has 10 total hits, and 6 of them are extra bases. So exactly. He's just out here to mash and do nothing else. And you're like, hell yeah, dude.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I don't know if, like, having a guy who has an OPS plus over, like, at 101, who doesn't take a single walk all year, is that valuable? I don't know. Moderately. But, like, Naylor's hitting. Like, we were talking about, 25 at bats and 10 hits.
Yeah,
he had a home run. By the way, a dummy power home run over the weekend. I thought that was
dummy thick power. Good stuff.
Like, that was just that was not an easy pitch to hit for a home run. Just for the listeners who didn't see, it was down and just down below the zone. He just was like, nope, I'm big.
I love Josh Naylor big swings. He does not look like, he did look like somebody just gave a bat to and said, hit this thing.
Here you go. Then,
yeah. Like his swings are just so freaking wild. There was,
Kwan's another one to explore, but yeah, I mean, yeah. Naylor is,
yeah. And what we hope for. As far as evaluating the Guardians' decision-making on outfielders, Bradley Zimmer currently with the Tampa Bay, or not Tampa Bay, Toronto Blue Jays. He has one hit on the season.
And how many strikeouts, Matthew?
Seven.
Okay, so he's doing it. 16 doing plate it big.
I don't want to shit on Bradley Zimmer. I liked him so long.
I know.
But I'm really just saying, I think they made the right decision there. Like, they knew when to move on from him.
And again, like, I like aspects of what someone like Mercado is, well, not someone like, but what literally Mercado is doing. Like, I like it. I don't know if it's tenable, but I like how he's like, I got to make a place for myself. And it's about mashing. I'm going to put 15 or 20 pounds of muscle on.
Yeah. I mean, if there was a place for a backup platoon outfield bat, I would love to have on my team.
There he is.
But you just can't run him out there every day. I don't think you can even run out there every time as a platoon because he's still going to be bad against.
Yeah.
Left-handed pitchers once in a while, but you just
kind of maybe not. Maybe he's good.
Maybe he's another Jordan Luplow. Never know.
There you go.
Mike Trout.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you for finally legitimizing the things I've been saying.
On that note, Merritt, I think we'll call it a podcast. If you haven't already, follow us on Twitter at Cover the Corner. I'm Matt Roy. Merritt is at Merrill Lynch, like Merrill.
Fuck, Merrill, no, Lynch, Merrill, like Lynch, Merrill Lynch, like with Lynch. Merrill Lynch.
I messed it up every time since we've been back. Follow Covering the Corner on Facebook, coveringthecorner.com, obviously. And Merritt, talk to you next week.
Good to hear from you.